And we are live for a new episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Wintrow. How you doing, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
All right. So we both have different setup this week because I'm back in Montreal for a few weeks. Seth is down with the family in Florida.
Sunny Florida.
Sunny Florida, yeah. A lot sunnier than here right now. And so you flew down there, right, Seth? Do you have your car?
Yep.
Okay, so you don't have your car.
No.
You don't have a car. And if you had your car, well, actually, you probably, if your car back home set up on Wi-Fi, were you able to at least install a new update through the app now? Because you can do that through the app now.
I know you can. I didn't get the update yet.
You didn't get it? Oh, okay.
No. Okay. But I'm always the last one. I feel like somewhere somebody at Tesla got upset with me and put me at the bottom of the list or something.
Yeah, well, if someone's getting upset too at Electric, I'm probably on that list too. But I did get the update on Tuesday. So I had the chance to play with it a little bit. Unfortunately, though, I didn't get the... I arguably the biggest thing of... Well, it's what was teased about the update. Elon called it like a few weeks ago, called it the holiday update. And when you actually download the update, if you're in the car, I mean, I don't know how people found that out, because since you can do it through your phone, it's so much easier. You're never in the car to start the update or anything like that. That's been a big plus. But you just start it on the app and that's it. But some people were in the car when they started the update, and when it installs it, it says unwrapping your gift for the holiday or something like that. So that was a nice touch. But he talked about it having a full self-driving sneak preview. So people were wondering what that was, what that would be. And it turns out that it's really just the driving resolution update that now includes the stop signs, the traffic lights, and just some general more like some more advanced visualization of intersection, basically. Like you can see the lines, the lane coming into the intersection. If there's like a left turn only lane or whatnot, that's also indicated on the driving visualization. Also some garbage cans. You can see garbage cans now. Not sure if that has anything to do with intersection. Not really, but it's in there. And but the stop sign, well, stop signs is pretty straightforward, but the traffic lights are pretty advanced civilization where you can actually see the individual light within one light. You can see the red light, the yellow light, the green light. If the lights are flashing, that's also represented into the driving visualization. And of course, like, people say, what does that actually do for full self-driving? I mean, we've been talking about that for a while now. The driving visualization are really just like a confidence builders for drivers. You're not supposed to look at them that much when you're driving. I mean, if you're using autopilot correctly, it's not something that you should look at. I don't know if you have experienced that, but now I'm catching myself looking at it too much for my blind angle, for my blind spots.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, because
you're not supposed to.
No, you're supposed to still look, and I do still look, but sometimes I catch myself like looking at it first. I'm like, all right, there's no one there. I'm like, oh, like last second, I went, all right, I should check physically too. But I mean, so at the same time, I tell myself, okay, I'm looking at it first just to test it and see, oh, if it's correct. Like, and sure enough, right. I mean, most of the time it is. Most of the time it's actually pretty accurate. And but yeah, so driving visualization, it's more comfortable. There's, you see what autopilot sees, and if it is accurate, like just like I explained now with the blind spots, it builds some confidence into, okay, if it was making the decision based on that information, at least it's based on the correct information. Like, it sees what it's supposed to see, and now whether it takes the right decision or not is another thing entirely. It's another part of the neural net, but at least the computer vision aspect of it, you know, it's there from the driving resolution, the rendering of the environment around your car, and that alone, it's good. I don't know if that's what people were expecting when he said a full self-driving sneak preview, but it's better than nothing. Now the big thing, though, is not everyone getting it. It's one of the first things that you actually need the new hardware 3.0 the full self-driving computer that Tesla developed themselves with the chips that are being built by Samsung and everything. So if you don't have that in your car right now, you don't have access to that. And it has to light a fire under Tesla to actually do those retrofits. Because that was a selling point of those retrofits. That's why I bought the full self-driving package. They tell you, buy it now, and you're going to be on the list to get it as soon as possible for the new computer. And then when that never happened, like a year later, it's been a year now since I think I bought FSD, almost a year. And they said, yeah, but it doesn't matter that you don't get the retrofit now because the capabilities are the same right now for both computers. That's not true anymore. That's not the truth. So the new updates are starting to introduce features that you need a new computer for it. So now I have paid for features that other people have, but I don't. So I think Tesla now should really put more focus on the retrofit program. But that's a big program. You didn't buy FSD, did you?
Nah. Well, it's on my leased car. Actually, no. Full self-driving is not. Just autopilot is.
Okay.
But I have neither on my Model 3. And some of these updates coming along are like, maybe I should upgrade at this point. But now it's a lot of money. So I'll probably just wait till my Model Y comes.
Yeah, because now it's back to 4,000, I think. Because you do have autopilot and ends on your car, on your Model 3.
Yeah, on my Model X.
Model X. So you do have the ends. So on your Model 3, it's probably full price then. Oh, okay. Yeah. That's
so probably, it's like 10 grand to get the full self-driving.
Well, that's a lot more expensive. Yeah.
Not going to happen.
No, not going to happen. Unless they actually delivered it all out of nowhere, then 10,000, well, now people start thinking about it, but that's, well, we're talking right. Fantasy here. But you still have a few updates that from the holiday software update here that you can actually use. One of the big ones that Tesla's sort of catching up to the other automakers on, text reading, message text, SMS reading and answering all through voice command. So that's something that a lot of Apple Car or Android Auto users were already enjoying in their cars. And also that other automakers also offer it like natively into their system. Now Tesla has it also natively in their system. I used it very briefly, just a few tests. I use my car in English, like all my setups are in English, and my car still, in terms of voice command, I still have some issues in terms of like using voice command in English due to my accent, I think. I don't know if Tesla has the same thing. Like my Siri now, Siri and my Google Home and things like that, they all understand me like very well because they learn from your own language. Like the more you talk to them, the more they learn and they get better. I don't know if Tesla has that. Like, yeah.
I think Tesla on the back end uses Dragon Naturally Speaking or Dragon.
Mm.
I feel like they, which is a pretty robust natural language thing, but I don't know if that it has learning, personal learning on it. That'd be interesting to find out.
Yeah. I used to be invested in Dragon. That used to be one of my investments way back when they were the leader in that. I got out just in time, I think. But anyway. So that's working fine for me so far. And of course, the other big part of the update is just more an overhaul, really, of the voice command system that they are now putting a lot more commands that can be activated from a more natural way of speaking. They just set the temperature to 70, turn on passenger seat heating, things like that. You don't have to like think too much about it, so that they actually activate that function. So that's nice. Also, in general, more function to focus on. People having to limit their interaction with the UI in general so that you can just do more through voice command and less with the touchscreen. And I think that's a theme of this whole update, really. It's like with the text message, with more voice command, with also there's some like smaller things that are not as obvious, but things like a voice keyboard now. So if you... I mean, you could always like you can start out with trying to do the voice command, but if there's actually a point where you have to enter something through the keyboard, which is of course like a digital keyboard on the touchscreen, you can switch it to a voice keyboard through the dictation, a new dictation symbols on the keyboard. So that's also fewer interaction with the touchscreen. There's even activate the dash cam through honking the car. So like if you turn that on, you can do that in the security section of the settings. As soon as you honk, the last 10 minutes going to be recorded, saved actually to your, because they always record the last 10 minutes, but you can decide if you want to save or not on your Tom drive.
So I think that's going to be a problem. I think people are going to start wanting to record, and the easiest way to record is going to be honk the horn. And I think people are just going to be honking the horn quite a bit.
Yeah. It's not a complete replacement to having to touch a screen to do it, because you're not supposed to honk unless it's absolutely required for safety. But the idea behind it is if it was required for safety, you might want that footage for whatever reason. Right. But yeah, if it comes to that, then yeah, it's gonna be a problem for sure. But I think, I mean, what it is replacing, it's literally just one touch on the touchscreen for a button that's always visible to you. It's always at the top of the screen, so it's really not that big of an interaction to remove. Things that are removing like a lot of interaction, I think, like the glove box, for example. Like the glove box, you have I think like three or four touch to get there, like to actually get to the glove box touch.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. Now you can just say voice command, and you can just say open the glove box. Those are things that are removing more interaction with the touchscreen. I'm just mentioning that one as a technically it does remove one interaction with the screen. So I think there's a big theme for this whole update with that, with the voice keyboard, with the text reading, with the better voice command. Tesla wants to focus on keeping your eyes on the road, which is something that Tesla has been criticized for with Autopilot, where its driver monitoring system with Autopilot is not that great. So people tend to abuse of it, since it doesn't actually detect if you're looking ahead or not. And end detection is also it's also the one lacking. I mean, it's not head detection; it's torque detection, and that's the biggest issue. I still see a lot of people like referring to it as like, oh, Tesla didn't detect your hands on the steering wheel, so your hands weren't on the steering wheel. That's two different things. Whether Tesla detects them or not, or if they are there, two different things. Don't fall for that. But yeah, also some general improvements in Autopilot, like pretty much every update. And I used it a bunch in the last few days with the holiday travels. And the one that really sticks out to me is clearly the lane change, the auto lane change. It's a 2,000% improvement.
Is it smoother, or is it like...
It's not smooth. Like, I never had a problem with how smooth it was. Like, I feel like it's not like too fast to change lane. It's not too slow. That my problem is like when it decides to do it or to let you do it, in relation to a car you're passing. That was always my big issue, because it would... So there's two ways it's gonna initiate nowadays to... Oh, let's not do that. My Windows is trying to update itself right now. So there's two ways. If you're navigating on Autopilot nowadays, if you have it activated, you can automatically start the lane change for you, which is nice. But I had to stop using Navigate on Autopilot with that, because I thought it was not aggressive enough to change lane after passing, whereas it will wait until it's like, I wouldn't know exactly, but several, like too many car length in front of the car that I just passed. So if someone else was behind me on the left lane, you try not to stay too long on the passing lane, of course. And I too often felt like I was holding up traffic because the car wouldn't just go back to the right lane fast enough. Now, that's also a problem if you're not on Navigate Autopilot and you want to initiate the auto lane change yourself, because it would, once you do that by, of course, turning your blinker on, turning your turn signal, and the autopilot would detect that car in your blind spot. Well, not in your blind spot at this point. It's back. It's further down than your blind spot. I mean, I'm not also a maniac that just cut in front of people. I leave a few car length, but I feel like extremely comfortable doing it myself. But then autopilot would block you. And the craziest thing is it wouldn't not only not allow you to go back to the right lane to auto lane change. It would, for some crazy reason, it would sometimes, as it detects that, it would slow down just a few kilometers an hour. It would just slow down as it detects the car in the right lane. It tells you, no, you cannot go on the right lane right now, which makes no sense.
You know what? My mom used to do that. It would drive me crazy. Yeah. She would slow down every time she merged. It was just the worst. Mm.
Because but what's crazier is that it's also blocking you from merging back to the right lane. So
right,
there's absolutely no reason to slow down then. So the autopilot would automatically slow down it. So, and why I'm going back into the right lane, it's probably because I have someone in the left lane also trying to pass right now. So I don't want to slow them down, and I don't want them to crash in my back. And then they think every time that would happen and I had someone behind me, they would think I'm brake checking them for no reason. That's what they think, because your brake lights happens when you slow down like that too fast. I mean, it's just regen. They're not applying the real brake, but the brake lights still show up. So it's very dangerous. Now that's completely gone with the latest update. I haven't experienced that at all. I'm complaining, but I was still using the auto lane change. I was just doing it. Like, I was just getting better at figuring out when it was actually going to let me do it on the right lane, and then I would wait to that and do it. So it was still so convenient that I was willing to look past that and just adapt to it. But now it's the feature that's adapting to me, and now it's letting me go to the right lane much sooner. So it's much more aggressive. It's much more comfortable with fewer car length after passing a car. I mean, the animation changes also, but that was a few updates ago. That looks good, but like nothing special. But yeah, I mean, I did probably like closer to 300 kilometers in the past few days with the update.
Oh wow!
And most of them on autopilot, and never had an issue. Like I never had to take over or anything like that. So. Yeah, it's starting to look good on that front. But it's still highway driving. I'm just talking about highway driving. So the full self-driving, the missing link right now is the city driving. And even though now with that update, which, again, I don't have the new driving visualization because I'm not on R3. But it's encouraging, really. I'm not saying that I believe on the timeline right now. And I think we're in the same boat on that.
Mm-hmm.
A million full self-driving taxis or cars on the Tesla network.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's a year out or what.
That'd be surprising. I mean, first of all, before they do that, I think they have to do the retrofits first.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to that and see if I can have that before there are any more other differences between having the hardware 3 and not, because when you have a Tesla car at this point, and if you're an AV autopilot user like I am, what you're fearing is like when are they going to reach the limit of the hardware on with their software update, and that was the case. I remember. Right when, actually in 2016, yeah, because I was on the call with Elon Musk when he announced the Autopilot 2.0. And that was my first question, is that are we finally reaching the limit of the Autopilot 1.0 hardware? And it was like, yeah, the computer is reaching its limit now. There's going to be some fine-tuning, but there's not going to be any new features coming out on Autopilot hours. That was 3 years ago, a little over 3 years ago at this point. And... Now are we seeing the limit of the 2.0 hardware at this point. Like, now it looks like it, if they're starting to release new features that are only for 3.0. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be some fine tuning again, some improvement and things like that. But the good news, it's at least technically everyone on 2.0 should have technically access to the 3.0 retrofit, since it's just a computer retrofit. But it's going to be such a crazy retrofit program. Because if they do deliver the full self-driving, then everyone that has one of those cars is going to want to upgrade. There's just no way. And and at this point, there's like a few hundred thousands of them out there. So it's a giant program. All right. Other updates on the holiday software updates are other features. Do we have camp mode? Camp mode has finally arrived for those crazy people that like to camp in their Tesla. Now they found.
I definitely want to try that. My wife does not. My kids might want to try it, but I don't know if I want to try it with them. But not, you know, nothing against them, but it's tight in there, and they're.
But in your Model X, you, I mean.
But you can't really lay down in the Model X. The middle seats.
Yeah, what's your configuration again?
I got the 6 seat.
The 6 seat. It's not a back seat at the back.
The back seat folds down. The middle row are like
move forward. Chairs. They move forward, but
they just move forward.
But if you move them for, like, you know, those people, they keep buying those. I think it's Dreamcase, the company that does them, especially for Teslas. You would be able to fit a full, like, the Dreamcase mattress size, and if you pull them forward.
I don't think so.
No,
okay. No.
I think those are mainly made for the Model S, where you can fold the back seat down, and that alone is big enough. But you also have a big trunk when the Model X trunk with a third row seat is smaller than the Model S, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And they made some for the Model 3 too. Now apparently you can do that in Model 3, but it's also I have to assume it's pretty tight.
Yeah, TestMat makes a nice cheap thing. We were working with them a little bit. I'm looking to try that out, but. You know, I like the whole idea of not having to worry about the heat or the cool.
Yeah, that's what, by the way, we didn't say it, but that's what camp mode is. Like, it's going to run, keep your camera control on, but turn off everything else so that you don't keep the power on too, for like if you want to plug something or anything like that. But the lights and everything goes down so you can actually sleep or something.
Jorg in the comments says you need a Model X 5-seater for sleeping. And I imagine you could probably do it with a 7-seater as well, but that middle row has to be the fold flat, mm-hmm. not the captain's chairs.
Yeah. Other update that you have with the holiday update is called Trax version 0.1. It's actually the toy box, so it's some kind of toy box used to be Easter eggs, really, but now it's just it's like fun feature that they put in the toy box. Like, there's no hiding it or anything like that, so it's not really an Easter egg, and it's basically like a little music studio that you have on your touchscreen, basically, and you can create some beats and add some different instruments to it, and really a little music studio inside your car. Something you can use while charging or anything like that, and something like you can play back your masterpiece right on the premium audio system of the Model 3 or Model S or whatever you're using. Which I did some digging on the Model 3 system for that article, and I figured out that apparently Tesla hired a bunch of you're gonna be better to me say that name, Bang Olufsen.
That's not bad. Bangin' Olufsen.
Olufsen. Okay. Oh, yeah. Which is one of the more premium, like, speaker companies, like audio companies. And what they did, apparently, is that they hired those engineers, and they were like, build me a system that's as good of a Bangin' Olufsen, if not better, but with just off-brand type of hardware so that we can do it a lot cheaper. And apparently, they succeeded, like, a bunch of audiophile that tested the Model 3 premium audio system, I say premium auto system, but like most Model 3s, everything that's not standard basically has it because it's the part of the premium interior, and most cars are premium interiors. But you get that system, and it's super comparable to some of the premium automakers that do offer a Bang & Olufsen system, and those can cost like thousands of dollars, if not tens of thousands, and depending on how crazy they go. So it kind of matches well with this features, this music studio feature. I haven't played with it yet. I saw it in the toy box, but I don't have any musical talent, unfortunately.
My son's actually really excited about trying it. Unfortunately, we're down here, and we didn't get the update yet. But theoretically, by the time we get home, you know, he's big into GarageBand, and you know, we always have fun. Like when we're waiting for his mom in the car, this will be even more fun. I kind of expect to look for him and just find him in the car in the garage at some point. Because he just really enjoys being in there, and that's kind of a weird situation. By the way, the music, the tracks program, is that, do you know where that came from?
I'm thinking, like, I looked into it. I tried to see, like, if I can compare the UI to something else. I couldn't really, but to be honest, I didn't spend too much time on it. But I have to assume that they fork something else, like to work on the car.
Right, Linux music program.
Yeah.
Their software chops are getting pretty good, I have to say. And like when you think about it, you know, let's go 2 years down the road. There's going to be over a million of these Tesla UI clients out there, probably, you know, in the millions. They're going to have like the third, you know, fourth or whatever largest OS, like, you know, smart OS. I mean, you know, we talked about this a long time ago when they started talking about creating their own music service.
It didn't make sense back then, but now we're starting to see like, oh, maybe
we're starting to get a lot of numbers. And you know, the Tesla OS may become it wouldn't be surprising if somebody in Tesla was like, hey, why are we just limiting this to cars? Why don't we just make a tablet or something like that to do all this cool stuff on the road? I don't know.
Yeah.
A couple years down the road, you know, Tesla is a software company and a hardware company. It wouldn't be surprising to see something like that emerge.
Yeah, because when they were talking about the music app, then it made sense to, all right, if it's in the car, it should be also on the Tesla app so that you can like just transfer the music into your car and vice versa. Because you don't want to have like one music service for your car, one music service for your phone, for your computer, and whatnot. So that's why, now that Spotify is everywhere, people are just using that. I think Spotify won on that front, at least for now. Probably going forward too. I don't know if Tesla wants to get into the involvement of having like the music rights of and everything like that. It's, like, it's quite the endeavor, really. But anyway, like you were saying, like your kids are excited about this update with the tracks, but it's pretty much an update for kids and a lot of other reason to, like, Twitch now is also in the car. So the kids love Twitch, love watching the video games on that. Two more video games on it too. Stardew and Backgammon is now on. Never been a big Backgammon far, and I don't know what Stardew is, but it's definitely like a nice independent game. You call it a platform game, I think, something like that, like a 2D platform game or something like that.
I'm also not super into it, but I did notice that it's hitting the Model X and S screen full screen as well, which is kind of cool. You know, the portrait display, it goes full screen, so that's cool.
Sorry, I lost you for a second there, but I heard like full screen.
So the game goes full screen on the Model X and Model S. Whereas the other games are kind of letterboxed.
Yeah, it's the format is not ideal for some of those games, because I assume maybe it's a phone game. Is it normally a phone game that starts, you think? So it would make sense if it's a phone game, you hold it as a phone, as the same phone.
I'm not
as
sure.
A
I'm not,
vertical screen.
That's not my gaming realm, but
all right. Another Tesla news this week, moving on from the holiday update, we have the some news from China. I mean, we talked about that last week a little bit. It was announced that Tesla might have secured some big loans for its operation in China, and it was confirmed yesterday in a SEC filing that Tesla got $1.6 billion, well, the equivalent of $1.6 billion USD from a consortium of Chinese banks, mm-hmm. and they used part of that to repay a previous loan when they first launched Gigafactory 3. Well, started construction on Gigafactory 3. They got close to $500 million in loans from the banks, and now this new loan they are paying back the previous one, and they're using the rest to finance the activity at the Gigafactory 3. So you might ask yourself, like, why do they need more money? Because the factory is already like deployed and making cars, and a lot of cars. We just saw. I'm about to post an article after the podcast on this because the parking lot at Gigafactory 3 is insane right now. Overflowing with Model 3s, and that's after like the past few weeks the parking lot was already full, and they've been shipping them out, so looks like production is pretty good, probably in the hundreds a week, getting close to 1,000. Well, I wouldn't be too surprised. But they're not making everything of the car there. They're making the body, they're making the final assembly, they're making the paint, they're making things like that, but we suspect that a lot of components are not being made there yet. So more investment will enable them to make more of the car there. Also, there's been rumors about Tesla maybe getting into battery cells, so that might be a location to do their own battery cells at one point. And Model Y production, I mean, Tesla hasn't confirmed that yet. Well, they confirmed that the Gigafactory 3 is going to make the Model Y, but it's not clear when. We know that Fremont is supposed to start soon, like early next year. Then it wouldn't make sense to move quick at Gigafactory 3, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I mean, next year, right?
Chinese market would be a good place for the Model Y for sure.
Yeah, because you look at NIO, basically NIO, like they're gonna launch next. Is it next month? Is that yeah? I think next month they're gonna launch their third car, and all three of them are SUVs. So right. They're really like trying to corner the SUV market, but the latest one they're launching is a little bit smaller SUV, so probably in the same size as the Model Y. So it would make sense for Tesla to quickly have their own offering on the market with the Model Y. So yeah, that money I think is going to go toward that. And Model 3 deliveries are supposed to start. It was announced today on Monday on the 30th. Tesla is going to hold a little like. Delivery ceremony, if you will, for the first 15 cars, and they're gonna give them to employees at Gigafactory 3. So that's nice. I mean, that's not unusual. Tesla has been doing that lately to deliver the first cars to employees. And but I think it's they're gonna move away from employees pretty quick because as we just mentioned, they've been shipping out cars for weeks now out of Gigafactory 3. We assume that those cars are going to delivery centers all around China. And it's just going to give them 2 days, though, to deliver those cars by the end of the quarter. Because, of course, it's important to reduce inventory at the end of the year and have those cars delivered so they're not on your books and you can collect the revenue from them. At this point, I don't know if they can deliver like 1,000 cars in 2 days in China. I'm sure they have the capacity for it. Like, Tesla has a lot of stores in China, a lot of employees. So I have to assume that it wouldn't be like that big of a feat for them. Now it's whether or not they do have like 1,000 plus car inventory, and I feel like that's about right.
From what, yeah, I've seen. I mean, they have to have quite a few cars in inventory. I mean, a little bit. It seems a little bit symbolic, like you know, like it, like they want to have the fact that they started building the factory at the beginning of the year and they delivering cars at the end of the year, like all in 2019. But I don't think. The numbers of cars. I mean, just the fact that they're delivering cars is a feat in itself, and it'll help the stock price, and it'll be something to celebrate. But I don't think the numbers are going to like move the needle on their global deliveries in a big way.
Yeah, because if the goal is 100,000 cars, I mean, like at this point, I see a best case scenario of about 1,000 cars for the main channel Model 3. So that's 1% of the goal of the milestone, or the 100,000 cars in a quarter milestone. So, I mean, it's like it's still good. Like, it still make a difference. Like, 1,000 cars that other markets don't have to deliver. But yeah, I thought it would be, well, earlier in the quarter, early in this quarter, and maybe even just before the quarter, I thought it might be a little bit more. But as the quarter progressed, I felt like 1,000 would be like almost best case scenario at this point. California just passed a new law, a new bill, regarding charging, how to regulate charging in the state, and it's a very interesting bill where the main thing probably is the permanent billing ban, which is something that we don't really like in the issue, because the time of charging is not really representative of the amount of electricity you actually consume while charging, because charge rates vary a lot for a multitude of reasons, but mainly the more the battery pack is charged, the slower you're going to charge. So like those first few minutes are worth it, but then it goes down in value pretty quick.
And like if you charge by the minute, it incentivizes slower charging.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wants that.
Yeah, and incentivizes the provider to have slower charging, which right. makes no sense. And so there was a problem too. The many place where you cannot do that, you have to do it because you cannot sell electricity. And when you charge a car, even though you sell it like as a charging service, if you charge by the kilowatt hour, you're technically selling the electricity at by the kilowatt hour and the kilowatt hour, and you are just charging more than you pay for. So you're basically an electricity reseller, the middleman between the electric utility and the electric vehicle owner. And in some markets, that's illegal. You cannot resell electricity. So in those markets, they would have to reform both sides of the law. They would have to reform like if you want to impose a ban like California did, which makes sense for the reason we just mentioned, you have to also look at the other side. Like, now we need to enable charging station operators to actually sell electricity, which makes sense. I mean, that's like, because I know that where the fear is from for the electric utility, that I have also a lot of power in the state legislation, is that then the next step, they're going to produce their own electricity on site. They're going to have like solar panels, solar farms, wind farms or whatever next to the charging station. And then they are completely cut out because they can have the renewable energy. They can have batteries on site and then just sell their own electricity to those electric vehicle owners. But why not? Like, if then do it yourself, make the electricity cheaper. They won't want to do that. So like it's a competitive market. That's it. There was some other interesting points in that bill where you're gonna have to let people know the price of the electricity you're charging, which in this case is gonna be by kilowatt hour since the per minute is done. So that brings an issue to companies like Tesla that literally have zero display on them. They have zero display, but I mean, I'm not sure like how much it makes sense for Tesla in this case here, because then how people know how much you're paying on the supercharger station. Like, the argument is that it's not transparent. The pricing is not transparent. But when you go to a supercharger, you go through the navigation system, you click on the supercharger to navigate there, and you have the price right there. So you know how much you're going to pay way before you even get there, which is arguably even better than just seeing there on a display. So I don't think that's that big of a deal, but I mean, I don't think that it's fixing an issue that really existed. Most other automakers, they do already, not automakers, the charging station operators already have displays on the screen, so they can list the price there. But Tesla's gonna have to find some way to address that.
I mean, I don't understand the intricacies of the legislation. I'm not sure. Am I coming through okay? But I don't understand.
I'm cutting off a little bit.
So I don't understand why you can't just, like, Tesla could put up on your display whatever they need to have on the, you know, theoretical display on the supercharger. Like, you know, you're charging at this rate, you've used this much electricity. Like, why does the display need to be on the charger itself? Why can't it just be on the car?
Yeah. So that's coming from a place where different automakers from electric vehicles owners having different cars from different automakers going at the station, so that it's not the same UI inside a car. Since Tesla is all Tesla vehicles using the Tesla supercharger, they don't have that issue. So that's why it's kind of dumb. But hey, no laws is perfect. It's gonna probably cost Tesla like a few millions to retrofit everything, unless they find like a very cost efficient solution. I don't know if it's like at the stall. If it's at the stall, it's gonna be crazy expensive. But if they can have like just like one sort of information thing at the actually, you don't even need a display, really, like a screen or something like that. The price don't change much. Can you just slap the price on like one of the stall, like with a sheet, like there we comply with the law,
like a gas station. Yeah.
Well, yeah, some of the gas stations are still like changing the numbers up and everything. So
right,
very similar. Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of that when it passed, but I do like the price per kilowatt hour. That's that makes sense. Speaking on stupid things, Honda CEO had some very interesting comments this week about electric vehicles, saying that he doesn't see the demand for electric vehicles increasing. And that makes sense, because if you make shitty electric cars, you think there's no demand for it. So like he lives in this little bubble where we make like cars that suck. So like why would people want to buy them?
You know. I don't think anybody sees the demand for Honda Clarities increasing. And, you know, they're not bringing their Honda E, which is actually kind of a nice looking car, but not, you know, without much mileage to the U.S. So why would anybody buy, like for Honda, he's right. Like nobody, the demand for the Hondas is not going to increase.
Well, he's right because he only sees demand for electrical being driven by regulations, which is fair when you just look at the numbers. If you don't actually like talk to EV owners, if you don't understand like why they're so passionate about their electric cars and everything, then yeah, you think, all right, you just look at the numbers. This market has a lot of electric cars. Oh, this market has a lot of incentive for electric cars. If you just stop at that, you don't see the whole picture. And that's what he's doing here. I'm quoting him here. There are different regulations in different countries, and we have to abide by them. So it's a must to continue with R&D, but I don't believe it will become mainstream anytime soon. So he only sees it as being driven by regulation, and that's the only reason why they are investing in making more electric cars. He says that he do believe in hybrids, though, still. I believe hybrids will play a critical role. The objective is not electrification per se, but improving fuel efficiency. And we believe hybrid vehicles are the way to abide by different environmental regulations. So again, it's all driven by the regulation. It's not driven just by vision, by long-term vision here, where hybrid, they're still going to require fossil fuel. It's still require burning fossil fuel. So he's right. It's better for fuel efficiency, but you still need to burn that fuel. At one point, you won't have any fuel to burn anymore. So even if it's that's in 100 years, you're going to have to change at some point. So why not change it now? Because we can. We have the technology at this point. And if you invest in it more than just what you need to in order to comply, that would make a big difference, of course. But no, not really. And that on the E, I mean, we were kind of excited about it, even before, like after the fact that we learned it's Europe only. That 35 kilowatt battery pack, 125 miles of range, I felt like it was like it could have been better for a 2020 car.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what Mini is coming to the market with, and they are coming to the U.S. Good looking car. You know, people definitely love it, but that 125 miles is going to be a little bit frustrating, and the charging rate as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's still going to fit the lifestyle of a lot of people. It's just that it's going to limit your market share, and then they're going to say the same thing. Like, not that many people are buying that car. I mean, yeah, of course. On the other side of the spectrum, Volkswagen has been a lot more willing to invest in electric vehicles, and they announced today that they are accelerating their plans for the rollout of the production capacity that they're going to deploy. And they were first aiming for a million car capacity to build a million car in 2025, electric cars, of course, to 1.5 million electric vehicles in 2025. So that's they're cranking things up a little bit. They are more optimistic about their plan. Their plan to convert factories from fossil fuel vehicle production to electric vehicles. I know that you're like in the camp of they're always about those predictions, but they don't come true.
Yep.
And like I wrote in the article, that's kind of remnanted because they did miss their targets before for sure. But I feel like I've seen it. I've seen what they've been doing, and like they are clear. The investment, like they're going out, like they are spending that money into electric vehicles. The Zyko plant is converted to electric vehicles now, and they are ripping things up there. Might not be going everything as planned, but they are making the investment at least. So, I believe that they are going to have that capacity to build electric cars. Whether they're going to be great or not, we don't know yet. We haven't tried the ID.3, which is going to be the first car on the MEB platform, on which most of those cars in the next 5 years are going to be based on. So it's going to be a crazy time for Volkswagen. I've been saying it for a while. There's some big names that are going to go down with this transition to electric vehicles. And Volkswagen seems to have like their sights set to the right place. Like they know it's the future. They're investing into it, but they could still fail because it's so much money being invested that if they invest that much money in a vehicle program and it doesn't work, that's a big hit for them. I'm not saying that the ID.3 won't work. Like that's the one we know most about, and so far it looks good on paper. But we need to get into a car. We need to see how. I'll actually perform and everything. I'm optimistic about it.
Yeah, I mean, 2025, that's quite a ways off. It's 5 years off. You know, getting to that point might be a little bit rough. Like, you know, if their product isn't, you know, as good as the market leader in electric cars right now, mm-hmm. Tesla, or maybe some Chinese companies, maybe they don't have a demand for 1.5 million electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't have a demand for 1.5 million total vehicles. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's going to be like.
Yeah, the market's going to be so much different in 2025. But like, my biggest thing is like 2025, people won't want to have a gasoline car anyway. They will want an electric car because at this point, it's going to be clear for everyone that it's going to be the future and you're going to have no resale value in a gasoline car. But of course, I'm not saying that means that all new cars are going to be electric because there's just not going to be the capacity for it. So at least planning to have a large production capacity electric vehicle by that time, that's the big deal. Because of course, cars are super complicated. You have a giant supply chains behind them. So at least to prepare for that, that makes sense. Now, like you just said, like Tesla, the electric vehicle leader, in 2025, do we know what kind of capacity Tesla's going to have in production? Because right now they add 400,000 a year, basically. Next year, they're going to probably be easily over 500,000. I think probably closer to 600,000 vehicle a year. And I think they're going to reach the million by like 2021. End of 2021 would make sense for me. Like that's when they're going to reach a million vehicle per year production capacity. So that's going to be 2 years ahead of Volkswagen. So it's not; they're not that far behind.
Right.
In terms of production capacity, again, planned production capacity. Now, once they ramped up, when Tesla ramped up Gigafactory 4, then things changed. I think they ramped up Gigafactory 4. I think they start producing some vehicles out of Gigafactory 3, maybe like the truck, Tesla Semi, things like that, and then Gigafactory 1. I mean for that. And then Gigafactory 3 also has more potential for increase too. So when they crank that up a little bit, and of course Tesla's going to be in a complete different situation, I think, by 2023 with Model 3 program, Model Y program, both in full swing. Like, with that as a basis, I mean, when Tesla had financial issue, the driver was the Model Y program, Model S program. That was the big Tesla's big driver of revenue and gross margin. Now the whole Model S program is being dwarfed by the Model 3 program, and now we see Tesla doing better. And once Tesla has the Model Y and Model 3 program both feeding off each other, because we have to remember they're sharing 70% of their parts being produced at the same place, same places actually, because Gigafactory 3 and Fremont. That's going to be a solid foundation for Tesla to build on after that. They're going to be allowed to even make some mistakes. I mean, now they're like basically not allowed to make mistakes for years, where everything was every mistake would bring them to the brink of extinction. Not going to be the case anymore. So I think that's why they were bold enough to come up with the Cybertruck. I think you think without the Model 3 program being a success, they would ever be a Cybertruck? I doubt it.
I don't know if there'd be a Tesla, to be honest with you.
Well, that too. Yeah. But let's say it wasn't that big of a success. Let's say like it still works, but Model Y was such a big success. Like we can push this further. And then now we see the Cybertruck. But Cybertruck is what did they say? They say late 2021?
Yeah, which
2022
is probably a better bet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I keep like looking around for like where is that thing gonna be built, but I found no clue as at this point, and I feel like they're gonna have to make some move soon. If we're talking at this point, on the official timeline, it's gonna be less than 2 years now. We're talking, so they have to make some move, and since the chassis of the truck, the whole platform is completely different. I mean, that's the basis of the truck. They have to plan this out like way ahead, and they probably have to do some trial and error. So if you guys hear anything about that, please let me know, because I'm always on the lookout for some information about that.
Yeah, I feel like there's a East Coast or South U.S. Factory that needs to come up. So
yeah. It's either that, Fremont now, forget about Fremont at this point. It's either that or like just big expansion of Gigafactory 1, so they seriously can keep expanding there. But I don't know if that makes sense in the workforce type of thing, because like Gigafactory 1 was already an issue in terms of workforce, like build a high tech factory with for batteries. And they expanded that to drivetrain too. So now we're getting closer to cars, but still it's not cars. And so that might be an issue. All right, let's close out on some news about Rivian, the other pickup truck company, electric pickup truck company. I've been saying it, they cannot stop raising money. It's insane. $1.3 billion was announced, a new round of $1.2 billion from Thiro, which is also a big Tesla investor. So that was interesting. Thiro is like a investing heavily in electric cars between Tesla and now Rivian. They were leading the round, but Amazon, Ford, and some funds from BlackRock also invested in it. So Amazon and Ford were already investors, so they are trying to probably keep their percentage of the company going with more investments. But T. Rowe is added in some BlackRock funds. $1.3 billion, that's adding to the $700 million earlier this year from Amazon, the $500 million earlier this year from Ford, and the $350 million from Cox Automotive. So now we're talking about close to $3 billion in less than a year for a company that hasn't delivered anything yet. Anything.
Some cool videos.
Yep, they did deliver a very cool video on the Christmas Day. We've been talking about that for a while. We saw that video, Seth and I, back in LA last year. CEO RJ Ascarin showed us like what was an early prototype, though. I think it was a Ford F-150, right? It was a like Ford F-150 test mule, I think, was it? With the Rivian powertrain in it, and they did that tank turn, they basically do a 360 turn on the spot without moving. It's pretty awesome. Now they showed us a full video of it.
So how does the tank turn work? It's the right wheels go forward and the left wheels go backwards, or is it each wheel does something different, or
probably they can do. They have to move the torque to each because they have a motor at each wheel, so they can do that. So they can move the torque at the wheel each one. But it has to be forward, backward on one side. But the actual wheel don't move. Like it's just really just the torque on each one.
Right.
They don't. When I say don't move, they do turn, of course, but they don't get a different angle or anything.
Right.
It's very impressive. Of course, not that useful. It's just cool looking. As we previously said, Rivian told us that they're not going to allow that on asphalt, on pavement. It's going to be for off-roading only, for obvious reason that that's just going to destroy your tires. But so if you actually, if you already off-roading pickup trucks and you ever saw a need to like, oh, I wish I could do it 180 right now, just turn around on the spot, then you could do that with a Rivian truck. But going back to the money they're raising, that's so much money for a company that hasn't delivered anything. I have to think, I mean, not that they wouldn't deserve it. Like, I big fan of Rivian, what they're doing. I love the truck. I love the technology. We looked at the platform that they built. They had that at the Auto Show last year. It was super cool. And they also look serious in the production, like they invested in production way before they never unveiled anything, which is rare for an EV startup. So I'm not saying that if I had to put my money on an EV startup right now, saying that Tesla is not an EV startup at this point, like they are like a major automaker at this point. So a new EV startup, Tesla not included, it would be Rivian. However, $3 billion is like so much money that I have to think that they are showing things to those investors that we haven't seen yet.
Like, well, I mean, we know Amazon's getting delivery trucks, and we haven't seen any delivery trucks.
That's the contract agreement that you could actually all invest based on that alone, because that contract is worth more than $3 billion alone, probably.
Right.
I would think, because unless they are making those things super cheap, but like if you put like a $30,000 price on it, that would be super cheap, and that's still $3 billion. Am I doing my math right? $3 billion? $100,000 for Prime's $30,000? I think that's $3 billion alone.
Yeah.
All right, so of course, that's not profit, but it's the $3 billion in revenue over, I think they're talking about deliveries from 2021 to 2024 or something like that, over 3 years. So yeah, that's one thing, but I think a company like Ford, which also working with Rivian on a separate vehicle program, which right now looks like it's going to be a Lincoln SUV.
Yep.
So that was a $500 million investment earlier this year, and now they're investing again in the $1.3 million round. So that must be looking well, and they are interested in that platform. So. Well, kudos to Rivian, they're doing well. I still have my reservation on it, even though I also have a reservation on Cybertruck. I'm definitely not buying both of them. If I do, it will have to be like purely for like trying for some test. If we do some test or something, and then I can deduct that on my taxes for like using them as purely for electric purposes, because I obviously have no use for two pickup trucks.
What a great occupation!
But I'm still torn between the two of them. Obviously, the R1T is supposed to come sooner than the Tesla Cybertruck, but the Cybertruck is just so much more interesting to me right now, in terms of features and in terms of pricing too. Like the base one of the R1T starts about the same price as Tesla's higher end
right
truck. So it's
it'll be interesting to see. I think Tesla's battery in-house battery thing might help them out.
I feel like you probably for $100,000 you can get the top of the line Cybertruck probably, while for the R1T I feel like it's going to be like the 135 kilowatt hour battery pack, which is the mid range one. So I'll be surprised if I can get the top one for that price.
All right. So we have a few minutes left or a minute left. Let's run through some of the comments real quick. Mm-hmm. Delta Echo or D asks about the Mercane wide wheel, which is a favorite scooter among our readers. Is it a problem taking this electric scooter on the airplane? And it is a problem. And I have a Mercane wide wheel. I would love to take it on the plane with me,
pack, but the battery
is way too big.
Yeah.
And you know, you can't check it because you can't check big batteries or any batteries. And you can't take the battery out, which is something, you know, if you could take the battery out and divide it up into like four smaller batteries, you theoretically could take it on an airplane, but it doesn't do that. So there's no real good way to do it. You could, you know, send the battery separately, but that's kind of a pain in the butt and doesn't really help you out at all. Moving along, when will the first Model Y be delivered?
Soon.
Anytime between.
Soon.
Yeah.
Very soon.
Between now and later this year. But I mean,
next
year. They're already
on. Yeah, next year. I think this year, I think this year is done at this point. But
right.
Volume production is on pace right now, from everything we hear, is on pace for summer 2020. Tesla normally takes its time to ramp up from the start of production to volume production. And the, unlike some other people, like I'm looking at you now, Volkswagen with the ID3, when they start production, they start deliveries too. Like, they don't sit on their inventory for forever. So I'm looking confident right now for early 2020, like Q1 2020 makes sense for me. So maybe not in January, but February or something like that would make sense.
All right, new question. Given it seems likely that Tesla has made a breakthrough on the million-mile battery, when do you think they'll start putting the new battery technology in cars?
Well, that could take a little bit longer, but so of course you have to invest in actually making those. So everything points to not only Tesla having a new chemistry for it, well, we reported again on it this week, they had a new international patent on their two additive that they want to add to the electrolyte. So it's not confirmed that Tesla has new battery chemistry, but it looks like it's more complicated right now. It looks like they don't really just want to go to another battery partner like they did with Panasonic in the past and just say, make this battery for us. It looks like they want to make them themselves, and that implies a lot of investment into production capacity and everything like that, and that also takes a while. But it looks like they've been working on that for a long time now, with the acquisition of Maxwell, the acquisition of the Hybar in Canada, and a few of those. So it could be faster than we think, but and low volume, I wouldn't say before the end of next year. Maybe the end of next year would make sense.
Yeah, maybe they start on the premium models.
Yeah,
first.
Maybe they start with like the Tesla Semi, or they start with like, because Tesla Semi is some late production in 2020 that's coming, some low volume production. Maybe the Roadster, they start with a Roadster, and that's, well, it was supposed to come in 2020. Now I'm not sure anymore.
Yeah. All right. Tesla's website, if you order Model Y Performance, is end of next year, which is 2020. And standard says 2021. Tesla obviously
hasn't updated that in a while, too, I think.
Yeah. I think they want to over deliver, under promise in this case. And they obviously want you to buy a performance model over a standard model. Germano from Germany also likes earlier said he likes the podcast, but he says, I bet Tesla owners would love to give Tesla active live feedback while they're driving and noticing AP is doing something correctly or not correctly.
I heard that they're working on that, actually. Hopefully that's voice activated.
And you don't have to push a bunch of
buttons. You can already send reports on Tesla, bug reports through voice activation. You can already do that. But I think that you can also, they're working on something where you can do it for Autopilot specifically, where they will also send the data regarding the particular incident with Autopilot within the last 10 minutes. A lot like what they're doing with the dash cam feature, really. Like the last 10 minutes with that. So that would make sense, yeah.
All right. The Tesla cars in EU get only half of the features in the latest holiday update. Even countries within EU have not had a complete update. A lot of lives could be saved. Any comments about that?
There's a new... sorry, I'm missing my camera. Petitions. A new petition going out right now to try to force the end of the EU regulators to try to enable more of Autopilot. But Tesla is also working directly with the regulators apparently to do it. But to be honest, I don't know, like, how, I mean, I know that here it's a lot of red tapes working relators. I know, I'm not known in Europe, like, how different it is, but it's all going to depend, like, how fast it can move. I'm not saying that Tesla is not without blame there, because maybe, like, it's how they work with them, but it's not just Tesla's on that. Like, they have to work with the regulators.
All right. I think either Lost in the Curve says, I think either Amazon or Ford will swallow up Rivian. I don't see how Rivian can work on skateboards, delivery vans, and their own designs and meet any timeline. Certainly a possibility, but, you know, I think
not Ford.
RJ, not Ford.
I agree with you on Amazon, maybe, but we don't know the valuation of them right now. I think because they already had a lot of investor even before they unveiled anything. They were able to secure some very nice investment before that. They bought a factory before they had any of those, like, $3 billion that came this year and everything like that. So, and they already had, like, hundreds of employees. So, I'm sure the Amazon and Ford have a nice chunk of the company right now with their big investment this year, but I don't think they're anywhere close to majority. And also, I don't think Ford has the cash to buy it right now. Amazon probably does, but I wouldn't count on it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think RJ is kind of smart in that respect, mm-hmm. where he's keeping the voting shares in his pocket.
Yeah.
And then there's one last thing. Rivian are filing exaggerated patents with the Fronk. I think Ford actually tried to patent the Fronk as well with a different design.
Yeah.
I think that's just normal in the industry, though.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about that. They were patenting different things too. They were patenting, like, opening it from the grill and things like that. So, I mean, I don't think that's going to be any patent wars over that stuff. The thing that I was a little bit, like, I didn't care much about was Rivian this week. It was revealed that they have a garden patent thing where they're patenting, like, ways to, like, leave your kid in a car that's self-driving and things like that. I'm like, all that stuff is useless right now. Just try to figure out self-driving in the first place, then figure out, like, what you can do with it, and you're gonna be able to do plenty of things. But there's a way bigger problem to solve before any of that, of those self-driving features that come with it, like an automated car engine that texts your parents if something happens to your kid in your car. Like, that's
right.
I mean, that's useful, but it's you're getting ahead of the actual problem here. All right, that's about it.
That's it.
All right, thanks a lot for listening, everyone. I hope you're having a nice holiday season. And we're not taking any break here at Electrek. It's nonstop, so go back on the website. We have new posts up all the time. And we're going to also be there next week, as usual. Next week should be at the same time, too, no problem. We're going to be there. I hope you will, too. So see you soon. Ciao.